GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm a scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur who founded and serve as the host of GreenSense.
And I'm Bob Kessler, our executive producer. You know, Robert, I don't know what the best kind of salmon is to eat when it comes to being environmentally responsible. Is it farm-raised? Is it wild-caught? And those standards are shifting, so we'll get that straightened out. There's a new app that talks to your car and helps you drive better, save gas, save money. And since 4th of July weekend's coming up, we're going to talk healthy grilling with Chef Mariah Ibrahim.
Hey, that all sounds really good, and it's all coming up in this week's edition of GreenSense. Chef Mariah Ibrahim, the fit foodie, joins us now in GreenSense to talk about summer grilling recipes. Welcome, Chef.
Hello. It's great to be here.
How you been?
Great. Super excited about the warm weather.
Yeah. And it seems like it's warm all across the country. And with warm weather, we have the 4th of July holiday coming up. So I thought it would be a great time to talk about grilling. And maybe we'll do this in two segments. The first one, let's talk about some meats and veggies, and then we'll have a follow-up one next week to talk about some desserts we can grill. What do you have?
I love it. Yes, I love it. Well, with warm weather, you've got to cook outside because otherwise your house is going to be a hot box. So with the 4th of July, a great tip and something super simple, especially if you're feeding a crowd, is to make a foil packet filled with good stuff. And basically all you're going to do is you're going to take a piece of aluminum foil, a large piece, just depending on how much you're grilling. And you can do a variety of veggies and meats. So I love to take pieces of corn on the cob because corn and 4th of July just go together. I'll take a piece of corn on the cob and cut it up into pieces. And then I'll take maybe some chicken or sausage, even some shrimp, throw that in there with some nice bell peppers, maybe some onions, and add in a bunch of fresh garlic. I mean, who doesn't love garlic, right?
Throw in some fresh garlic. Now, wait, you can mix all these things together and then you don't have to worry about cooking times?
Nope, you don't, because you're cutting everything up small. So the corn is getting cut up small. And basically what the foil packet is doing is it's steaming everything. So as long as you keep everything pretty uniform in size, it'll all come out beautifully.
That's the trick. Uniform size, listeners.
And if you want to throw in some potatoes, that's the only thing that I would say. Maybe you want to parboil them. Just get them a little bit soft in advance by boiling them whole and then cutting them up and adding them to the mix. But you can do potatoes, you can do corn, you can do peppers, add in some shrimp, add in some chicken, throw it all together and add in your garlic and some, maybe a little bit of mesquite seasoning or hickory or something to give it that smoky flavor, whatever you like, really. And pack it in that foil packet, leave some room so that the steam rises and keeps everything in there nice and hot. Put it on the grill until it's done. And then everybody can either have their own individual foil packet or you can make just one big one for everybody to share.
That sounds too simple.
It's so simple. And it's so fun to open the packet. I don't know. There's something about seeing all of the steam rise that gets pretty exciting.
It's like the old days when you cook the Jiffy popcorn on the
stuff. Yes, exactly. And now, this way you don't have to worry about putting things on a skewer or making sure that things don't burn or fall through the grill. Nothing is going to fall through the cracks. Everything is going to stay nice and put in that tinfoil packet.
So a few questions. Do you have to add any olive oil or liquids?
Yes, thank you for reminding me, add in a little bit of butter. You can do ghee also. Ghee is a clarified butter, which doesn't have any dairy in it. So if you're watching your dairy, that's a great option. You can do, I like to avoid olive oil when you're heating something hot, just because of the smoking point. I would prefer you use maybe like a coconut oil. And that will take care of it. You can add a little bit of broth too, or hey, some beer. I've been known to cook with beer and it does the trick.
It's 4th of July holiday. And then lastly, how long does this cook for?
Well, depending on, you know, the amount of food that you have in there, you're looking at about 10 minutes.
That's wonderful. So simple. And that's why we like talking to you. I tried your egg muffin recipe. I couldn't believe how simple it was and how easy and tasty it was. And this sounds just as simple because we all want to spend our time with our friends and family, not on the grill.
So, exactly. This way you don't have to worry about flipping burgers or burning anything.
So, Chef, thank you for your insight. We'll look forward to talking to you next week to talk about grilling some dessert.
Awesome.
Don't just hear about it. Chef Maria demonstrates her recipes on Facebook Live. We're linked to it in this week's show notes. Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com. There's a new smartphone app that aims to make eco-driving into a game that cuts down on pollution, saves you money, and makes driving more fun. We're joined now by Anna McDevitt, Director of Communications for the CarPrint app. Welcome, Anna.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having us on.
The average American spends 280 hours, that's 7 full work weeks, in the car. And that puts 5 tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And your app claims to help drivers reduce their fuel consumption by 20%. How does the app reduce fuel consumption?
Yeah, so CarPrint reduces fuel consumption in a pretty simple way, actually. We're teaching drivers how to eco-drive and giving them feedback to determine when they're driving efficiently and when they're not. So a lot of folks already understand how to drive efficiently. You and I already know not to accelerate too quickly and things like that. But with CarPrint, you know, we're promoting long-term behavioral change by turning it into a fun competition.
And I understand that you've made this into a game. Tell us a little bit about how you did that.
Yeah, so we've got a number of gaming elements, and a lot of them are still in progress as we have a lot to do to continue building the app. But the fundamental element is that each driver competes against his or her car's MPG rating. So every car has a rated fuel economy for highway and city driving, and the goal is to beat your own. And in addition to that, you can go past just yourself and compete with other drivers, kind of similar to how you can challenge other people on apps like Fitbit. And then eventually we are going to have teams where you can be on a team of eco drivers and compete against other teams for better fuel economy ratings.
Well, the Pavlovian way of changing behavior is to punish failure and reward success. How do you do that in your game?
You know, that's something that we're working on, definitely. Right now, CarPrint is just so focused on getting users who care about the environment and want to make an impact right now, especially as we're seeing this kind of environmental assault by the Trump administration. So really the value that you get out of it is making a difference when it comes to our planet, saving fuel, offsetting emissions, and ultimately helping to stave off some of the worst impacts of climate change.
We've interviewed a number of people on our show who call themselves hypermilers. They employ a range of conservation techniques to increase their car's gas mileage. Do you borrow from their practices in the game?
Yeah, you know, somewhat. But here's the thing. If eco-driving isn't safe, it's not really eco-driving, right? Because if you crash or cause someone else to crash, that's a huge toll on the environment. So hypermilers certainly get really creative with the ways that they reduce their fuel consumption, but some would say that they go a little bit too far. For example, driving 55 in an 80-mile speed zone, that's dangerous for yourself and for others, so it's not a technique that we pull from with eco-driving.
Tell us some of the practices that you're looking to enhance to get higher mileage using your app.
Yeah. So there's 12 main eco-driving steps that can help reduce your fuel consumption. We focus on 8 of them at CarPrint. We actually have a fun little acronym on our website called CarPrint that lays them all out. But a lot of it is just about anticipating traffic signals and other road users, planning ahead of time. So using apps like Google Maps or Waze to avoid congestion and ultimately spend less time on the road. And then, you know, avoiding things like idling and keeping up with your car's maintenance that will get you better mileage, such as, you know, having your tires inflated and rotated.
Do you have different suggestions for different kinds of cars? For example, if a car is powered by gas or if it's electric or a hybrid, are there different techniques to employ to maximize mileage?
No, not really. That's kind of the beauty of eco driving, is that whether you drive a Hummer or a Prius, you're saving money and fuel and the environment by doing it. So there's not really specific techniques that work better for certain cars. As long as your car has a fuel economy rating, all of them can be included in the benefits of eco driving. Obviously, that looks a little bit different when it comes to things like hybrids, but those do put out emissions with recharging and batteries and such too. So there's still value in employing any of the eco driving tactics.
A lot of cars today will tell you how efficiently you're driving through onboard monitoring systems. How does the app differ from those systems?
Yeah, well, we kind of think that those systems complement CarPrint, actually. A lot of those dials in cars today are a minute-to-minute tracker that teach you to eco-drive on the spot while you're driving. But CarPrint is different because it's less about that immediate on-the-spot eco-driving and more about long-term behavioral change. With CarPrint, drivers can track their progress and look back on their trips over time, comparing weeks and months, really whatever you want. And then I'll just quickly add to that too. Again, CarPrint is a lot about motivation. When you just happen to have dials on the dash, your eco-driving success isn't always something you're consciously thinking about. And so CarPrint kind of puts that back in your control and in your mindset while you're driving.
So here's a big one. How easy is it to use the app, and what kind of a learning curve should people expect?
Yeah, it's really easy. So you're actually talking to someone who's not super tech savvy, and I've had a
Me
lot
too.
Of fun. I've had a lot of fun using it. It's really straightforward, and you can definitely start saving on gas right away. A lot of it depends on 3 things, though. So 1, your current driving habits. 2, how many of the eco-driving tactics you're actively employing. And then 3, your driving environment. So it'll look a little bit different for everyone, but you know, savings can range from about $5 to $10 to $25 a month once you really get into it.
Oh, that's pretty amazing. And how much does the app cost?
Yeah. So the app is free right now. You can download CarPrint for free on an Android or an iPhone. And then the only thing you need to purchase is an OBD scanner, which plugs in under the dash and helps to transport the data from your car to the app itself. And so those are different prices on Google Play and on the Apple App Store.
Have you heard from any users on how they like the app and how they enjoy the experience?
Yeah, you know, we're still in the early phases of CarPrint, so we're just starting to incorporate some of that user feedback. One of the biggest things that we hear and know we need to develop more is the gamification aspect of the app. But as your classic social entrepreneurship startup, we're in sort of a chicken and egg cycle where we can't completely implement all of the gamification aspects, such as, you know, teams and those kinds of challenges. Until we have more users, and then on the other side of that, we can't get all the users we want until we have all the gamification aspects implemented. So that's something we're working on, and it's trucking along for sure.
Well, I think one of the things that you said was really important is that you made this fun, and the more fun things are, the more people are apt to use them. So we wish you the best of luck, and we thank you for joining us on Green Sense and letting us know about this fantastic app. Application that can help save gas and reduce emissions.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. Drive eco.
That's Anna McDivitt with CarPrint. the smartphone app that helps you drive better to save energy and money. You can find out more at carprint.xyz. We're linked to it on this week's show notes when you subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast at greensensefarms.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive, so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. It takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you.
We've heard for a while that farmed salmon is less nutritious, impacts the environment, and is not good for the fish. But things are changing. The Monterey Bay Aquarium announced that farmed salmon that comply with the Aquaculture Stewardship Council, or ASC, have been upgraded to a good alternative. To help us understand how to make sure you're eating the right salmon, we're joined by Peter Redman, VP of Market Development of the ASC. Peter, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you. I'm absolutely ecstatic, excited to be here.
First of all, explain what impacts farm-raised salmon have on the environment and how farming salmon can have impact to the fish and why they're less nutritious to eat than wild salmon.
Yeah, so we wouldn't necessarily agree with all of those points. I think the baseline indicator is that farmed salmon and the requirement for farmed salmon release pressure on wild stock. So it's fundamentally a key part. I think even most of the Alaskan fishing industry would recognize that today's wild farmed salmon is a necessity to keep their stocks healthy too. There are good and bad impacts to farmed salmon, and I think the rigor and strictness of a standard that has to be applied to it can help or deter the health of the fish and the ocean.
Well, you know, I've seen a number of documentaries and reports on there on how this farmed salmon will have lice on the fish, how feeding it plant-based nutrients rather than protein meat-based nutrients impacts the omega-3s. So tell us a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's absolutely the best indicator of how working with Monterey Bay and achieving our good alternative rating is a key component of that, where we are making the progress to go from what we would call in their rating system a red, yellow, or green, where what we would consider a very high yellow is some of the controls we put around feed and sea lice and how you can reduce the amount of protein used in, or specifically fish protein used in the feed, and some of the things you can do control sea lice in the pens.
So tell us a little bit about the standard and what you've put in place to upgrade the quality of farm-raised salmon.
Yeah, so our standard is a very rigorous, robust standard. It has two main components, environmental and social, which depending on the area of the world, one is equally as important as the other. But for the sake of discussion for a North American market, when we look at our standard, there are 521 compliance points. So that's individual checklists. And we are a metrics-based certification program. So we ask specific questions with measurable answers. So benthic impacts and all sorts of things have key measurable targets to lower. And we're a continuous improvement program. So every 1 to 3 years based on the species that we have a review, we expect improvement from the benchmark of the prior year.
Give us a couple of concrete examples in your checklist what makes this standard better than the past.
Yep. So I think when we look at some of the things like fish in, fish out ratios, which is one of the key determinants into the actual feed that we use, we've consistently lowered and lowered that to where our salmon is at the sub one, which means it takes less than a pound of salmon or less than a pound of protein to make a pound of salmon, which is, has long been considered one of the holy grails of how you can achieve sustainability, is if you're using less to make more, that's a key indicator. So I think that's probably a really good example of where working with folks like Monterey Bay, who I think we've been working on this review close to a year and a half to 2 years, and changing a standard is never easy. But it's taken us, I think it's a total of 10 indicators. I don't have the exact indicators other than the example of fish in, fish out. 10 indicators were the last 10 that we improved within our standard to reach this benchmark.
Well, and that's fantastic, Peter, because that was always a big point of contention. It was taking about 1.5 pounds of feed, and much of that was soy-based. And so you had to grow it, ship it, and then feed it to the salmon. And that just wasn't sustainable. So getting that down to about a 1-to-1 ratio is fantastic. And if I understand correctly, you've also added that they have to add some fish meal to that. And so explain why adding fish meal is important.
Well, when you add a fish meal versus a fish protein, a fish meal can, so we issue credit for things like if you're in a, let's say for example, in Thailand, where all the tuna canning industry is, we give credit for byproducts. So when you fillet a tuna or you do whatever you do with the tuna, whatever's left over could at the highest level be considered therefore a bycatch unless you do something with it. We offer the environmental equivalent, I guess, of a carbon credit for using those trimmings in fish meal, and it's done very successfully in Brazil through tilapia, where it's a very low-yielding product, done very successfully in the wild-caught fisheries. And so we want to incorporate as much fish meal into that as possible, and then reduce the amount of virgin stocks that are used, virgin meaning an anchovy or something like that, a real whole fish. So I think that's key to how we can bring it in. And our goal is really to get to the 0.8 range of a fish in, fish out ratio.
Are you familiar with the term greenwashing? Is there salmon washing out there? And how do you know that you find salmon that really is officially ASC certified and that it's much better to eat?
Yeah, so I think there are a variety of different ways of salmon washing, if you like. From an ASC point of view, we have a logo that we use on pack. The reason we use a logo is we have a chain of custody that goes with it. So on the one hand, something like the Seafood Watch through Monterey Bay Aquarium is a really good way of rating a program, but those are rating programs and we're a certification program. And there's a massive difference between the two. It's one to say that this is good, bad, or the other, and it's another to actually go out, certify it, have a certification body in the facility checking everything. But then we use a chain of custody to make sure that when it goes from the farm to the processor and ultimately through the importer, that salmon A doesn't gain more friends and become not 1 pound but 4 pounds of certified product. But B, we want the consumer to know at the other end that if they buy something that is ASC certified, it's truly a responsible choice when you're going out and purchasing.
What about the consumer? Are you starting to see restaurants and grocery stores promote this label so that they become more familiar with it, start requesting it, and then maybe that makes it more widely available as more companies become certified and maybe perhaps more affordable?
It's really the holy grail for any environmental organization is how do you get the consumer. Because the consumer will tell you, and they will be very honest with, they believe in sustainability, responsibility, have it. However, when that then goes into a grocery shelf, that message is kind of somewhat convoluted by just about every party involved. So where we've seen much more success is when retailers, I'll give you a good example, Aldi makes a very big deal around Earth Day, and we see the customer responding extremely well to that. But individual certification organizations, I think we need the retailers to help us push this in front of a consumer or at a restaurant table. I think when they see it and they're explained that this is a responsible choice, they identify it very clearly. But I think that there's a whole world of education that needs to be done in sustainable seafood.
Peter, in closing, is wild-caught salmon still the gold standard that everything's compared to?
You know, that's a really interesting. I would say, so personally, from my point of view, I think nothing beats a really good wild king salmon, but I've had some of the best king salmon farmed in New Zealand in the world too. So I think it's six of one and half a dozen of other. I think to an average consumer, the word wild will always have just a massively positive connotation. And I'm perfectly fine with that, because I'll go back to what I started with. At the end of the day, if somewhere around 2% of the world's supply is coming from wild, 98% from farmed, that number would go down even less if farm wasn't around. So I think there is an absolute role for both, and the consumer makes their preference based on that.
Peter, thanks for joining us on Green Sense and sharing your insights onto the world salmon market.
I appreciate having your time, and thank you very much.
That's Peter Redman, VP of Market Development of the Aquaculture Stewardship Council, talking about farm-raised salmon. I'm Robert Colangelo, reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Help us help you. Head over to greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show, and support our Podbean Patron Drive. We need your help. Now more than ever, it's the time to support independent media so we can continue to put on great shows that feature sustainable innovations and the people that are changing the world. Bob, what are you working on next year?
We're going to check in with our friends at Green Builder Magazine. They're going to present the Flex House. So it's a house that is less than $100,000. Plenty of room for a family. You got all the latest green tech. Saves all kinds of energy and money. That's the Flex House. Also, you might not have spent a lot of time in Ingham County, Michigan. Maybe you have. It's where Lansing, Michigan is. Anyway, Patrick Linneman is their drainage commissioner. He is known around the world for the way he goes about building green infrastructure, namely replacing pipes with plants. It's all next week.
Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. I want you to do your part, so stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.